On this episode of the podcast, I have with me Karim Galil. He is the CEO of Mendel AI. We're going to be talking about domain-driven AI. A lot of the things we're seeing out there, a lot of the AI that everyone's experiencing is being developed by larger companies. And I think we're going to see more domain specificity as the AI evolution keeps moving forward. We're going to be talking about native versus wrapped products and also about a little bit of adoption if we can get to it, hopefully. Karim, thanks for being on the show.
Thank you. Thank you, Amir. Nice to be on the show.
Absolutely. Mendel AI, before we start, can you tell everyone what the company does?
So Mendel is a platform that is designed to unveil truth from clinical data at scale. We are swimming in data. In the last decade, we have generated a lot of patient records, but we are starving for information. You cannot really tell what treatment works for what patients today based on data-driven kind of analysis. It's more subjective opinion of the treating physician. And Mendel built a domain-specific AI technology that allows you to sift through all of this data and, again, answer questions that were unanswerable before. And for the questions that are answerable already, make it faster, easier, and more accurate.
Awesome. I'm sure it's a great space for AI to play in, and we'll get into that. You know, I guess when we had spoken before, we talked about, you know, where AI is and what people are familiar with. And I think a lot of times when we think about Gen AI, we think about what we hear in the news and media. And I guess a lot of these models do come from larger FAANG companies, the Facebooks, the Googles, obviously OpenAIs. When you're looking at the landscape and some of those models that are being introduced into the public and people are building with them, what are some of the challenges that some of those models that are coming from the large tech firms represent?
I think the key challenge is, if you're working for one of the companies that you have mentioned, you want to build a model that can drive a car, translate text, and do search if you wanted to do search, right? You want the model. I think the idea of AGI is the idea that is driving most of these companies. And the problem or the reality of the matter is that the state of the technology today is not there. There's a lot of domain specificity to certain industries. Take healthcare, for example, right? The example I always give is, if I give you an internal medicine textbook as an English speaker, you can essentially read the book, but it doesn't mean that you understand the nuances and the context of that. And that's what we see a lot with those type of technologies. It's really good in understanding language, but not in understanding the nuanced things that are not mentioned in the text, but can be inferred from the text. That's one big problem. And I think the other problem is, when it comes to healthcare, there are certain things that are not tolerable, say hallucinations. In healthcare, it is not okay to be wrong, but it is okay to be wrong if you are consistently wrong. What is absolutely a red line is if it's going to be a toss of coin where the system is not deterministic in its mistakes and deterministic in what it does right. The other thing is, a patient journey is usually thousands of pages and bunch of tables. It's a no context window of any of the LLMs that exist today kind of fit a one single patient journey. Which means you have to rely on a lot of trunking and like hacking. And during that, it becomes a lossy process where you lose actually some very critical pieces of the information. So those are some of the challenges. The one that I personally, I have a personal issue with is the marketing of those LLMs is very inaccurate, and it makes everyone confuse fluency with intelligence. Those models are really fluent, but it doesn't know what the heck it's talking about. And the problem is the marketing doesn't mention that. The marketing doesn't mention, hey, don't confuse fluency with intelligence. It actually makes it look like, look how fluent that model is, hence it's very intelligent. And that is essentially something that is a big challenge, because as we approach a lot of our customers, we have to do a lot of education on if you have a parrot, it can repeat whatever you're saying. It doesn't essentially mean that you can ask it what treatments should that patient take. So those are some of the challenges that we see. It has to do with marketing. It has to do with technical limitations of those models. But it also has to do with the domain, the specific needs of certain domains like healthcare.
Absolutely. You know, That's actually great. You know, fluency versus intelligence. That's a great, great point. And if somebody once told me you can judge an expert by the questions that they can ask. And I think it's the reverse here, as you're kind of referencing. When you're looking at, you know, AGI and then obviously narrow AI, specialists obviously are deeper. They have a better understanding of context. Is there a world that potentially we could see narrow AI being built into a larger AGI type of environment with a lot of specialized AI bots working together? Because obviously one single platform that knows everything, it seems really cool. I mean, Hollywood's been talking about it for 30 to 40, 50 years. We all have that fantasy of that coming true. It seems a lot more difficult, at least in my lifetime, but how do you see this playing out? Is the narrow AI really the cornerstone of how AI is going to be leveraged more efficiently in public day-to-day?
It's a great question. I think it's the analogy is like, again, if you go to Home Depot and you're only allowed to buy one tool to build the house, I don't think you can build the house. And I think today, every product is allowed to use one tool, LLMs. And the reality of the matter is, it's going to be the combination of a lot of different AI approaches coming in together to solve a problem. So rather than building a tool and saying, okay, this tool is going to solve every single problem, you have to start with the problem and say, okay, to solve this problem, I need 1, 2, 3. To do 1, 2, 3, I need this tool, this tool, this tool. It might be only an LLM, it might be an LLM plus some rule-based system, it might be only a rule-based system, right? So essentially to start with the problem and go back to the technology is the scientific approach, rather than start with the technology and try to fit it to a problem. And we're seeing, like, there's this very famous book called Think Fast and Slow, right? And the idea of Think Fast and Slow, you have two systems in your brain, system one, system two. One system is very arithmetic, 1 + 1 = 2 type of a system. It requires time, it requires focus, but it can solve problems. The other system is more intuitive, fast, reaction, like, you know, like, how you breathe, how you swerve your car, if something is going to happen, right? I view LLMs as being that system that's very intuitive, fast. And now the industry is going to start focusing on system one, where you actually are starting to build knowledge representations. You're bringing a lot of concepts that were used during the AI, like, or caused the AI winter, like symbolic type of approaches. And I think those are going to, the combination of those two things together are going to start building domain specific, or to your point, like smaller bots for specific tasks that has higher accuracy, no hallucination, more grounded in the accuracy of what's happening.
And I guess, you know, that's a fantastic explanation. And as you're kind of looking at, you know, more domain specificity, more understanding of the depth and understanding to really get to that intelligence and what we're looking for, we are seeing two different types of products being rolled out to the market. We're seeing companies that are putting AI on top of a solution, which is interesting. They want to leverage AI. They want to get more out of their data. And we're seeing AI first products, and we're seeing those native products roll out and compete. And obviously one has a lot of data. I mean, we're talking to like legacy companies that are sitting on tons of data. And obviously they're trying to leverage it. And then you're seeing younger companies come through and go, we have the technology. We don't need as much data. When you look at that native versus potentially, you know, the wrapped or the layered on version of the products, what are you seeing in terms of some of the, I guess, benefits and challenges for both?
A lot. See, at the end of the day, AI is not, I think the model is, I wouldn't say the least, but relatively speaking, is the least important thing in the equation. I would say data is the second, the least is the model. Maybe the second most important is the data. But the absolutely most important thing in the equation is the talent. The talent is way more important than data. You have a lot of companies swimming in data. They cannot build one single model because they just don't have... The talent is very limited. I would estimate there is probably somewhere between 500 max 800 experts worldwide who are really qualified to build AI technologies. And when you look at the job openings, if you distribute them, like the big company, like the FAANG companies are absorbing most of those data, right? So when you are building a product, if you cannot hold, like if you cannot recruit that talent, just go leverage something that has already been pre-built and to your use case. Unless you're able to get that, like if you're able to get that talent, that's a different story. Now, if you have the talent, if you have the data, absolutely. If the current models are not working, go and build your own model. But what we are seeing is, unfortunately, a lot of people are doing the build versus buy. If you remember in like early 2000s, everybody wanted to build a website, right? And there was everyone started recruiting people to build their own websites. And we're seeing kind of the same thing now. We're seeing a lot of people saying, you know what? I'm going to build my own AI technology. Then you start looking at the talent. You find people with, and nothing wrong with that, Coursera AI courses. Like, that's awesome. But to really build a model, you need to spend 10 years doing a PhD and a postdoc. It's harder. It's harder than building a piece of software or building a piece of or building a website, for example. So I think the equation has to do to go into that order. Do I have the talent? Can I have proprietary data? If the answer is for those two things, then I can do a model or I can do a foundation and foundationing new approach to solve the problem.
Yeah, I love how you built that hierarchy, because I think that makes a lot of sense to me. And you do see a lot of companies that are trying to represent their AI solution. We won't get into the depth of that, but you see a lot of companies. It's important, right? You want to be progressive, you want to be current, and you want to make sure people know that you're adopting the newest and latest and greatest. That is a big gap from what we see as what you're talking about, really building those AI models to leverage the data and the understanding within, you know, being in a specific domain. And I don't want to call it a misrepresentation, because there is an underlying solution there. It's not the same solution, because I think as we are starting to hear more about AI, we hear more about Gen AI, there are things that people are now envisioning in their mind, especially with ChatGPT being one of the larger well-known products out there. People are starting to develop this thought that this is the product. This is what I should be seeing in other products. I guess when it comes to what you're seeing and maybe your product, is that a bit of a challenge to shift people's views on that? Or do you kind of run with that and go, hey, we need to leverage the fact that they're comfortable with this and we need to build off of that?
I think there is definitely a lesson to be learned from the ChatGPT experience, AI aside, from a product lens, which is the idea of moving from UX to or like UI to LUIs, moving from user interfaces to language interfaces. Like, people are expecting to interact with the product, not through fancier buttons and colorful interfaces and different pages that you need to navigate to. They're expecting to give a command in natural language and get what they need back fast. And it's the nature of the times we're in, right? We're swiping right and left all the time, and we're expecting not to figure out a software. We want the software to figure out what we need. And quite frankly, it's an enjoyable experience. And this is definitely a book to be learned. I think many products out there can be changed to just one single bar where you put a command and you get what you need, and you don't need to spend years optimizing. You know, I think the years where you have to spend user interface sessions with users and test where they put their clicks and all of that, I think this is going to be gone very, very soon. So there is that element definitely to be learned there. The thing, though, is what is underlying that. For example, when you ask ChatGPT a question and it answers you back, you don't really get some sort of confidence scoring of how confident is the system from the answer it gave. Again, it comes into healthcare. The expectations get, meaning like the foundational idea of a language interface can be learned, but there's ways and ways and ways and ways of improvement that we are going to figure out in the next few years on how to make those trustworthy, easy to use, but also not misleading in any shape or form. I think the other thing is users are becoming, I remember when I bought my first Tesla, my wife wouldn't click that autonomous driving thing. She just couldn't. She, in her mind, that was like 4 or 5 years ago, I cannot trust an AI to drive my car. And it took us like a couple of years before she started like giving the kids food and leaving the wheels, like leaving the steering wheels off, like actually relying so much on the AI. But it took a couple of years for that. I'm seeing what happened with ChatGPT is taking everyone out there from being uncomfortable with an AI to being super comfortable with an AI, actually too comfortable with an AI, where we actually have to get that back. Again, that's a thing that I think ChatGPT kind of helped the industry with. People are less reluctant to trust an AI, to trust an AI system. So if anything, I have a lot of issues with the approach of the marketing and the technology that OpenAI has and a lot of LLM companies, but I'm a big fan of how the product was packaged, how the product is actually going to change how we think of software in general in the next few years.
Interesting. And I guess, as you referenced the self-driving functionality of some cars, you have to take a little bit of leap of faith. You have to be confident. And I guess to me, that's a lot about adoption. You mentioned even ChatGPT, the OpenAI product has helped for adoption. I mean, the conversation was even on the table of possibility of things that AI we'd allow to do for us. Your product's very interesting because obviously the space within the medical area, especially with working with clinicians, I'm sure you guys get, I mean, there's tons of data. I can't even imagine how much data you guys have. But, and I guess when we were talking about adoption, I'm very curious, how something like this slipstreams into a clinician's work life. And I guess, we see a lot of GitHub Copilot stuff out there, and you see people getting comfortable, at least in the developer community. Hey, I'm working in parallel with this. But a lot of people, they haven't really had that opportunity. How does adoption work with like a product like yours and within the medical community?
So healthcare is pretty interesting. And there are so many players, right? You have the doctor, but you have the insurance company, and then you have the pharma company, and then you have a bunch of diagnostic companies, and then you have massive ecosystem of companies serving all these stakeholders. And as you are growing your adoption strategy with AI, you have to be very careful on where to start. And which is your beachhead to healthcare? And I think the physician is the last one. It's like trying to invade Europe through not by landing in one port, but actually by invading everything in Europe. And the reason that's the case is because, look, at the end of the day, the physician has big malpractice hanging on their heads all the time. They have 10 minutes of interaction with the patient. There's so much there. They are tired. There's very few physicians compared to the number of patients. So to kind of sell the idea of get to an AI, they need to see so many proof points to the point where, like, I'm using it because there's 20 other people using it and 20 other entities using it, and they're all not complaining about it. So for us, physicians or providers is the very tail end of that. That being said, I'm seeing a lot of great AI solutions that are doing operational excellence on the physician practice in the doctor office. And I think those are booming and adopting. For example, the nurse doesn't want to sit down and do billing codes. And that's not something essentially that's going to come in with some malpractice or come in with big liability. So you find AI solutions really making a dent there. But in the type of use cases that we work on, which we are actually answering questions, we don't find that to be the first user or the first customer to approach. Now, on the flip side though, pharma companies, diagnostic companies have amassed really good talent around data analysis and looking into the data. And those folks are technical users who are using the Copilot on GitHub. They are getting more and more comfortable with the idea that an AI is helping answer a question or write a piece of code. And we find those as to be like our prime customers today and our entry point to the industry. As a matter of fact, we package the product as Copilot for clinical data analysts. We don't replace you. We just make you faster, better, and allow you to get more accurate answers. And that's how we're going to walk our way through the industry. We're going to start with the technical users, then the business users, then finally the clinical users. And I think that's the sequence of events that we're planning to follow.
Interesting. Yeah, because I was going to, just piggyback off that question. As you're seeing the development within AI and healthcare, in terms of the data that you're seeing and the opportunity that represents the efficiency gains, how do you represent that with the doctors, the clinicians? How do you help them see that this will bring them efficiency and they will have, I guess, better tools. That's just another tool in their toolbox. Is that a conversation that just manifests, or is it something you have to, as you said, let them see, let them kind of hear the proof, and then they'll start getting around it?
So there's, as I said, there's two big buckets of use cases. One has to do with the clinical intelligence. And I think for that, it's going to have to go through years of seeing pharma companies publishing papers using AI, seeing insurance companies making decisions using AI. Then the doctor will follow. The other bucket of use cases, which has nothing to do with the clinical intelligence, has to do with how can I do my job faster, essentially, or how can I automate the laborious work, the non-clinical aspects of my job. You have two elements there. One is the doctor has to sit down, summarize everything that happened in the interaction with the patient in a medical record, right? They have to go sit down and file. That takes 3-4 minutes from a 10-minute interaction. A system that allows you to quickly write or transcribe that can manifest its value in the first time you ever use it. So that's a low-hanging fruit. And we're seeing great companies being built around that. As I said, the second is back office stuff, sending billing quotes to the insurance company, responding to certain emails. We're also seeing the value prop is easy to be felt, and the risk of inaccuracy does not come in with a malpractice issue, right? So the risk is low, the benefit is high and immediate. I think those are the attributes that we're seeing for AI products that are being adopted in the practice today. Things where you need to actually do F1 scoring, reference sets, and validate the output, and actually have a biostatistician look at it, which is the type of use cases we deal with. We're seeing more like bigger companies with deeper pockets and higher tolerance of risk being the first adopters of those.
Kareem, I was going to say, this is a super interesting area and potential application AI, and the benefits are going to be pretty big. Super interesting to hear your thoughts and kind of have you on and share with us. If somebody does want to touch base with you to talk about domain specificity, about Mendel AI, if they want to reach out to you, what's a good way of touching base with you?
Email kareem@mendel.ai is my email. I'm always happy to respond to any questions and keep the conversation going.
Awesome. We'll put it in the show notes. Hopefully people reach out and follow up. I really do appreciate your time. Thank you for being on and sharing with us.
Thank you, Amir. It was a pleasure talking to you. I really appreciate it. Thank you for having me on your podcast.
Absolutely. That's it for the episode. Be back again. Different guests, different topic. Two things. One, great conversation around domain specificity within AI. Share with somebody else who might enjoy the podcast. Also, like, subscribe, comment, leave a review. Let us know how we're doing. Until next time, thank you and goodbye.